You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSE has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as always on a Thursday, it's the double-header Dream Team edition of Viv Govender from Rand Swiss and David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities. Now, okay, gentlemen, let's put our cards on the table. Let me put my cards on the table now. What were we all worried about? There's no more load shedding. We've got Government of National Unity called GNU. So we've got GNUphoria now, GNUphoria, whatever it is you characterise it as. But everything is fine and dandy. David Shapiro, over to you on this one because you're laughing your head off.
You know what? I love optimism and I would never laugh in the face of optimism because it can be a very, very strong driving force. In its same way, it can actually create confidence and even growth. But I think there's a long way to go. I think that it's all very nice that this is happening. I'm so glad that the markets have sprung up. The property market is blooming. I mean, has run up very strongly. The bond yields have come down. Bank shares, retail shares have all had their moments and have run very nicely. But I think there's going to be a time, and I'm not pouring cold water on it. I'm just being realistic that one has to, take a step back and see whether this can work. And the only way it can work if there's a genuine respect at that level where you appoint someone into a position and you respect the decisions, you sit around the table and so on. And I think what worried me this morning, mm-hmm. And it was a quote, and I might misquote it, Viv. I don't know if you saw it in Business Day today where they give green lights and red lights, and for old Zuma who decided not to attend the inauguration, but he made a quote about, the Negro slave Ramaphosa kind of marrying into the slave, the slave master, Helen Zille, something along those lines, deeply racist, deeply angry. I can't, the quote was a little more articulate, even if it came from Zuma, but basically referring to Ramaphosa as a Negro slave and Helen Zille as the white master.
That's very interesting you say that, David, because, and I'm sorry to interrupt you before Viv comes in, because wants to talk. I spoke to a value manager who currently resides in New York, but his company is based in Cape Town and London. And I said right at the end of his very, very interesting chat about value stocks, and I said to him, something could go wrong, couldn't it? We know South Africa. South Africa is never easy. It's always challenging. It's always interesting. It's always exciting to analyze it politically or market-wise, whatever it is. And I said, what could go wrong? Could it be that the people that have been left out of the coalition start to make some trouble and cause some sort of social unrest behind the scenes? Because they have the ability to do so. So, David, carry on, and then we'll pass on to Viv.
That's my big fear, is that down the line when decisions are being made, you're going to get these disruptive forces. Instead of everybody working towards getting this country right, and that's where my optimism comes, or my hope, comes, that we do start addressing the issues that need to be addressed. We do give up a lot of the ideology that held us back over 30 years in favor of building an economy and attracting investment, So that's where I'm hoping for, and I'm just hoping people behave themselves. But when you've got disruptive forces like Malema and
Zuma,
they're going to want to be heard, and I'm very nervous what they can do, the disruptive forces amongst their people, because those are their followers. So that's where I'm saying, listen, I'm enjoying it at the moment. I'm optimistic. I mean, I'm having a good day. I'm liking what I see. But at the back of my mind is always this concern of what these people might do.
Viv, are you concerned, as concerned as David is?
To a certain extent, to a certain extent, not. I pretty much put Zuma as a Trump-like figure, able to win the elections, but not able to do much after that, unless he has an organization behind him like the ANC to basically do something. Like, I don't think the MK party has the capacity to actually do anything other than disrupt stuff. So that is the one good thing. I mean, I think to a certain extent, even the EFF is more capable, functionally than the MK is in terms of its ability to actually do things. And even then, I mean, I don't think the EFF as well, despite all we say about them, wants to really bring things down. I think the top end of the EFF have really nice lives, and they aren't facing jail sentences like Jacob Zuma is, so they don't have, you know, they don't need to risk it all in order to basically maintain things. Whereas with Zuma, I think he's more likely to try and risk it all, because what does he have without that? I mean, he has his own personal, jeopardy with regards to prison, etc., and also with regards to his family as well. I mean, in terms of the kind of stuff we've seen in the past. So I think that is the danger. But I don't see him basically mounting a long-term campaign around this thing. He can do some things like, what was done back in 2021, possibly. I don't think that even that is possible now, because I think, unlike back then, firstly, the government was unaware and didn't really act in time. If they basically are more forceful, especially with the army, etc., to ensure that there's order, I don't think they can do something like that. And I think that in terms of maintaining a long-term campaign in terms of, change, whatever, the court case is unlikely for the IEC, and Zuma is not in the doesn't have the capacity, I believe, either personally or as in his party to do any kind of action that's going to be long term negative. What I do foresee, however, unlike David, is I foresee no new legislation. I think that the time of big legislation may be over in South Africa, and maybe permanently. Because if you think about it, to get something into the floor that's pretty significant, like the NHI or something, you've got to go through cabinet, then you've got to go through the parliament, and there's enough roadblocks in there that's going to be a real trouble. I think this is actually going to be not just for this particular government, but going forward, we are unlikely to see a majority party in South Africa again for several cycles. You know what I mean? And South Africa, if you look at the thing, wasn't designed around a coalition situation, because they gave us, 2 weeks to get a coalition together? That's not by law. I mean, if you look at some of these countries out there, it takes months sometimes to get a coalition together to sort something out.
The Netherlands is a great example of that, Viv. Sorry to interrupt again, but they haven't had a majority government for a century, and it's taking so much time to get the new coalition together. It's just not happening. South Africa, different. I like the way that they put the time limit on what they could do. It's just a question now, as David said, I think, whether they get together. You've got these people, one's going to say, well, we should increase benefits. The other one says, no, wait a second, let's spend that money in creating jobs rather than creating wealth for people so they can go down to the local shop and buy stuff, which is a cool thing to say, I think. But Viv, I've interrupted you. Go ahead, please.
No, but I'm saying that's exactly it. So we are not going to have, we had major changes to BEE. We had the NHI being proposed. I'm saying to you that it's quite possible that we never see a major piece of legislation go through South African government for effectively the foreseeable future. Because the DA will stop anything ANC likes, the ANC will stop anything the DA likes, then it has to go to the parliament, and there's so many kind of things here. And as we become more and more fractured, we're effectively going to have a stagnated parliament, which might be a good thing. I mean, I don't think any policy in and of itself is bad. I think stability matters more than anything else. And if you are basically able to rely on the stability of something, even if it's bad stability, businesses can build around that. So that might be a good thing for the future. But I don't think we're going to see the kind of major moves we've seen in South Africa in the last, 30 years happening again. Maybe for the next 30 years, unless there's a major change and there's another major party being created.
I don't mind that. When I say I don't mind that, what I want or I hope at either municipal or at provincial level or at state level, that we start to address the issues that have really bugged us, which is the crime, the corruption, those easy things that we can address rather than big legislation. We get Eskom right, we get the water right, we get those things, which are more administrative things, because my belief is that once those start to work, just see, Viv, look how much happier people are without load shedding, without the concern. I mean, I know that, look, there's still 3/4 of the robots or half the robots that don't work, but I mean, those can be fixed. That's all I'm worried about, that the roads are tarred, that we get back to just creating an environment in which you feel a lot happier. Then we can, the schools and all the way up, get the hospitals, actually get beds and clean sheets and towels and things like that into the hospitals. For me, once you create an environment where people want to be here, that it automatically leads to a better life people wanting to stay, people investing.
What you're saying, David, is you've got to micromanage as well as macromanage the economy. You can have the macro management. You can say, okay, we're getting all this foreign direct investment because we're building a new huge solar plant in the Karoo or something like that, and it's costing tens of billions, and we've got this other infrastructure product, and that's going to create jobs and make it better in the future, five to 10 years henceforth. But you've also got to micromanage it and get the sheets on the beds in the hospitals and the teachers and the books delivered to the schools and that sort of things. So it's top down and bottom up, I think.
Yeah. That's where I hope you get the Western Province or, you know, the Western Cape experience happening. That people, they know how to do it. They've done it. And that we start to get that happening in Gauteng and all the other major regions, that we actually start improving people's lives. So I haven't got great expectations. You know, when I say great expectations of us becoming a driving economic force, you know, or something like that, I just want to start bringing life back to normal. You know, the normal things which you take for granted, Lindsay.
I do.
You know, every time I turn the water on in the morning for a hot shower, I pray to God, I thank God, I go into a special rain dance or whatever kind of dance.
I can't imagine you dancing in the rain naked ahead of your hot shower, David. So we'll shunt that aside if you don't mind.
Speaking of which, do you guys know that next week we're going to have like a month of waterworks happening in Joburg starting from next week?
I know. I don't know how that's going to work. But,
Poor David.
In midwinter.
Hopefully your wife is still asleep when you do that dance. But just tell me about the market movements. And actually, I'll start with you, Viv, on this one, because it's a local issue and you're more focused on overseas for very good reason. Do you think that what we saw on Tuesday, after the public holiday on Monday, the gnuphoria and also the American markets going to extraordinary highs. And I mean, I can remember when the S&P hit a low of 666, and now we're talking about 5,566 as the futures market on the September S&P contract. I just can't believe what has gone on in the United States just over the last few weeks and the last few years. But do you think what's happened in the South African market is that people have suddenly woken up and said, actually, we were wrong. We were short of the market. We've got to cover our shorts. And maybe things aren't that bad anymore. So I must buy First Rand. I must buy Spar. Do you think it's a knee-jerk reaction and yet to be confirmed by a sort of a consolidation of buying over a short and medium-term basis? Long question, but you know what I mean, I think.
As an example, I look at Standard Bank, right? Standard Bank has a P/E ratio of 8 and a dividend yield of 6.7, okay? Now, if you had to show me a company with that kind of statistics, you would say to me, this is the company that the market's betting is more than 50% likely to go bankrupt within the next decade. Okay, it's paying you a dividend yield of 6.7 and has a P/E ratio of 8. You know what I mean? Mm. That means it goes, and it's not the only one. I mean, you can look across the board. I mean, look at, for instance, like Nedbank, right? And it's a kind of a similar story as well, with regards to, you know, incredibly cheap at the moment. And I think what's happened right now is the market's looking at things like Nedbank, like it's a P ratio of 8, which goes a dividend yield of 7, okay? A 4 PV of 7.6. These are numbers that are indicative of the market not believing in a future. If we can get, as David said, to a point of stability, not improvement, just stability, where you just think that the world won't go worse for Nedbank going forward, it will be more valuable than it is. And not just more valuable, significantly more valuable. Because if you have a stock that just gives you an 7% yield and is basically has a P ratio of 8, you are going to think this is super cheap if you don't think there's a significant chance of literally the world falling apart in the next decade or so. And so, I think there's a lot of opportunity here still. Even if you don't think there's utopia, just normality is still going to be positive for these companies.
David, normality? Do you embrace normality?
You know, the one area of the market that I've always kind of believed in, and whenever I was forced to make some kind of choice for the South African market, you know, I would always say buy RSA stock, buy long dated. I'm not, you know, go go 2037s, in other words, 15 years out, or what's that, 13 years out, even 20 years out, you can lock in 11.5%, 12% clean yield. You know, I'm not taking yield to maturity. I'm just saying you're clean yield. So if you're an elderly person and you want to lock in that, you can do it. So I've always believed in that area of the market. Said it's and now what's happened, those rates are coming down. And also we'll probably go into a period somewhere down the line where rates start to fall. All of a sudden, if the long rate is starting to come better, it makes the property companies a lot more attractive on a yield basis because they've also discounted the worst. And then you've got, well, for that reason, Nedbank, and as Viv pointed out, at that kind of yield, hold on a sec, this is very juicy. You know, this is also, you know, we're going to go for that, and you're going to start buying yield as well. So I think you set off in motion a whole trigger of people looking for those kind of safe, stable yields, which will in itself underpin the market. So I just wanted to, while Viv was talking and he spoke about Nedbank, you know, to put this in perspective, I'm working on just price. I'm not working on total return, although I could probably get total return. But if you bought Nedbank 5 years ago, and I'm talking rands, I'm not talking even in dollars, if you bought 5 years ago, you're actually down 1%. You know, so even with what we have seen, this massive recovery recent, it just puts it into perspective how far back we had fallen. You know, that even with this run, with this incredible run over the last few days, and, you know, Nedbank were up, I don't know, anywhere up to 10, 12, 15%, I don't know, you're still only making your money back now. After so long, I think if I put in a total return, it would be a much better, you know, a much better scenario. But that's what happened to our market. That's how far we had fallen, and that's how, you know, to use Viv's words, how cheap we had become.
Okay.
This total return.
All right. No, it's a good analysis. You can take a chunk of the market. You can take a big long graph, and you take the last couple of months on the JSE, on ABSA or whatever a bank it is, and say that's pretty good stuff. But then you go back and you say, well, 5-10 years, it's absolutely flat. Here's one company that has really startled me today, and how people invest in it, I don't know. And David, you'll back me up on this one. I won't tell you the name of the company, but it says the change in headline earnings per share and headline loss per share and earnings per share and loss per share for the group for the period are expected to be as follows. Headline earnings per share of between 4,700 cents and 5,500 cents compared to headline loss per share of 11,027 cents in the half year 2023. And so it goes on. Share price up 23.4% at the moment, David. Tell us who it is, please.
That's Nampak.
There you go. Unbelievable.
I know. But Nampak went through a major rights issue. They consolidated their shares. And I mean, even with that, I think the value of the company is now maybe $1.5 billion or something like that.
So it's a small cap.
It's honestly, and I think it might have gone up in maybe 10 million rands worth of shares. I'll pick that up as we talk. But what has intrigued me, and Viv might have, you know, I'm an old-fashioned chap. I get money and I invest in on behalf of clients. I don't trade the market. I'm not a short seller. You know, I don't know trading techniques or anything like that. But I think what has intrigued me has been the depth and breadth of the market, you know, over the last few days, because there's huge price movement in even some of the smaller caps. You know, ArcelorMittal yesterday went up, would go up 10 or 12%. I'm saying that's a big move, you know. Who's going to pay 10% more than they did the day before? Yeah. What drives those? I haven't a clue. And these are not index stocks, so they wouldn't be part of the futures closeout, which happened today. Incidentally, there was like 50 billion trade today, so it was a big day.
Very good.
I'm saying, who deals in these shares? Who's making those markets and who's moving the needle on so many of these smaller cap shares to those kind of extents? You know, from my point of view, it's a mystery.
they look, I mean, like you said, the volumes aren't like, you know, gigantic to move some of these things. I mean, you know, obviously things are getting a little bit more active the last couple of days. But remember, like, I think it was 2-3 months ago, we had a trade IGF Oxides on APSA. And we did a trade and we moved the market significantly on APSA. On APSA. And it wasn't like a, it was like a lot of our big
cash. That's important information.
Like, not. Yeah, like in terms of like a small trade from us for our client, not for even our portfolios, for our client base, but just a trade idea to clients, you know, this is the thing to do. And for them to have moved APSA of all things, you know what I mean? It was shocking. Yeah. And that just shows the lack of depth, the lack of liquidity in the market. But, you know, that being said, I mean, looking internationally, and, you know, I always, you know, bring this back to my AI portfolio here. You know what, Nicholas, NVIDIA has done in the last month.
I'll tell you.
Here we go. We have to get to AI eventually, of course.
I'll tell you, right, because it's the end of June, 1 month. It's now $100 billion above Microsoft, which led the way for a long time.
It's number one in the world. Let's put it that way. Viv, carry on with your story because you mentioned NVIDIA.
Trillion. Where's my 1 month? I've got to find the 1-month movement.
Are you so excited, you two? Look at you two, like kids.
46.8%. 46.82%.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's tripled in the year to date. It's up 180%. And you ask, what's happening? What happens is when there's mania in the market, when you see markets going up, and this is what the whole thing about technical analysis is, and that's why this stuff seems to work, is that when the market has a direction either up or down, it's the safest thing to do is you find the direction change, get onto it. Because once it goes up in one direction or down in one direction, it does it often longer than should be done. I'm not saying NVIDIA is overpriced. I own it in my portfolio, but it's like, you know, even I am wondering sometimes about these things, you know.
You've got to wonder.
And same thing here.
And especially when I was watching, listen to this. I think it was CNN First Move or it was a BBC business report or something. And they said in 1999, when NVIDIA first listed, it was this price. Since then, it has got up 591,078% since 1999 for 25 years. I don't know if that's the correct figure. Maybe I was reading the noughts wrongly, but it's an astonishing story. And I'll get you. I'll tell you my tech story later on. But let me give you some prices now. Because the Rand is, didn't like it below 18, so it's 18.07 against the US dollar. British pound against the Rand is 22.90, and the Euro Rand is 19.36. The Euro dollar is 107.15, which is a euro that's fallen 0.25%. Gold price is doing rather nicely, actually, 1.3% higher at 2,354, with currency movements obviously. And crude oil prices being very significant there. We'll come to that in a second. Platinum up 19 to 985, and palladium prices are $924 per ounce, up $18. Slightly disturbing, the creeping up and the stubborn highness of oil. $85.32 for Brent crude oil, which is flat on the day but still elevated. And West Texas crude, $80.95, which is up 0.3%. S&P 500 futures. I woke up the other morning and I was maybe feeling a little bit groggy after a night of football. And I saw 5542 or something for S&P. And I thought, it's done nothing. But then I realized that the last time we looked at it was 5452. So it's just going berserk. At the moment, it's 55.68 for the September futures, up very slightly. Amazing, amazing performance. US 10-year Treasury bond yield, 4.27%. The Fed's on hold. The Bank of England's on hold today. The ECB has cut, and it's all going in one direction with the UK inflation rate down at 2%, from 11.5% down to 2%. In 6 to 9 months, I think it is. Quite astonishing what's happened to the world. The South African 10-year, again, I had to look at it and think, okay, it's 9.97%. It was above 11 6 to 8 weeks ago. Yeah. Yeah. People are buying. Yeah. Foreigners are buying South Africa, the capital markets and the equity markets. And what else have we got here? Bitcoin, which I know doesn't really involve us. Just below 65,000, which is flat on the day. David, movements on the JSE that caught your eye, please.
Just first of all, as I said, it was an incredible day today because it was a futures closeout, something like 54 billion trade.
That's close to a record, I think.
I thought that the market would go better, but obviously I don't understand the futures positions. But we came down 0.8% back at 8073. And we still haven't hit the high that we hit in January 23. So we didn't make a new high yesterday. But just some of the big movers were the platinum stocks and mining stocks. Anglo Plat's up 3.4%, Pan African up 3.2%, Durban Deep 2.5%, Anglo's 2.3%. So they made some kind of comeback. What's interesting as well, Sasol has had quite a good run over the last couple of days on the High Court's decision, you know, giving them this massive claim of damages against Transnet, you know, mainly relating to excess payments that they made in the pipeline. I don't know where Transnet is going to find all these billions, but we'll wait for this new government of national unity to dig it out of somewhere. Just on the backside of it, a lot of the shares that have been going up recently came back. APSA down 5.5%.
Yeah.
Vukile down 5.1%. Redefine, you know, Fashini, Mass, Woolworths, all of those came under a bit of pressure today. So losers outweighing winners 2-1. Roundabout there, but
it's had a good run. But what's interesting, David, you always tell me the volume on the day. You say 54 billion today, unusual day, of course. It wasn't an MSCI situation, it was a futures closeout situation. But before that, and I have to tell you this because you watch volumes and value traded quite closely, is that I remember talking to one of my contributors. And him saying, look, it's 13 billion, it's 14 billion, it's 15 billion. We haven't been above 20 billion for 4 weeks now. Suddenly, we're consistently above 20 billion. Yesterday was 30 billion. Today, 54 billion, unusual situation. And that tells me that people that have been selling are coming back into the market. Yeah. Local fund managers that have been underweight South Africa and foreigners that have been way underweight South Africa are suddenly saying, let's have a nibble because of political stability. And David, you're gagging to tell me something.
No, I'm just nodding, you know, in agreement with you. That has happened. And I think, Lindsay, where it's taken place has been the big traders have been mainly the banks. You know, you always have Naspers up there because there's the buyback of Naspers. So they're always buying back sufficient shares to make them a big trader. But today, and for the last couple of days, it's been First Rand and it's been Absa and it's been all those banks. Every now and again, you might find a gold share hidden somewhere between, you know, somewhere there. Yeah. Just, you know, but again, today, if I look even in the futures closeout, it was Naspers 13% in the market, First Rand, Goldfields, APSA, Standard Bank, Anglo's, Capitec. You know, those are the companies where the trade was taken, had to take place.
And Viv,
I've got my chart. I've got my NVIDIA chart quickly.
Oh, here we go.
What happened? This was listed in 1999.
It was, yes.
The beginning of 99, 6th of April or somewhere, 2nd of February, it was 5 cents. 5 cents.
591,000% increase, David Shapiro.
I've got 347,400%.
Oh, okay.
Giving you an annual return of 37.8% from 1990 for the beginning of 1999 to where we are.
Yeah, that's insane.
Wong has the most unbelievable story in the world. He used to clean toilets.
He did nothing for about until 2016. It went from 5 cents to 63 cents. I suppose that's fair game.
Not bad.
And from 63, no, in fact, from about 2019 is when it really started to move. So there you are.
Viv?
Yeah, I've just seen Jensen Huang, the guy that runs it, has most. He used to be a busboy, literally a busboy. Obviously trained and whatnot. Yeah, he used to clean. Like if you listen to his talks, he says I used to clean toilets, and therefore that's why I always have a belief in people that you know you never know who's capable of what. You know what I mean? So he used to like clean toilets in restaurants and stuff. He is a rags to riches story. Even though the weird thing is this, that the number two chip maker, AMD, is run by his first cousin. So there's
Are you kidding me?
No, Lisa Su. Lisa Su is his first cousin. But one thing I want to point out, I think we're about to end here, but the next 2 weeks are going to be incredibly volatile in Europe. We've got the French election, which Emmanuel Macron is going to lose, and badly, it seems.
Yes.
And it seems that if the hope for the market is that the right-wingers win. And when we say right-wing, we don't mean a right-wing party like the Republicans, a right-wing party. We mean the party that was allied with the Nazis in World War II. That's what we mean right-wing, right? That's the party that we hope wins, because the other party wins, which is they're going to be the leftists. We probably will find the market coming down significantly. Mm-hmm. And I spoke to you a while back about Nigel Farage. Have you seen the polls recently, Lindsay?
Don't mention that name to me. You seem to be of the impression that I like I don't call him Farage because he's sort of Europeanizing his name. He's like a garage. He's a Farage. His name is Nigel Farage. He's a busboy himself, and he's a horrible creature. He's a friend of Trump. He was even contemplating giving up the stewardship of the Reform UK party in order to go and help Trump with his campaign. Yeah. I don't say the word hate because I don't hate anybody. I dislike him intensely, Viv.
But he's polling at 20%+.
No.
Like, significantly, no. He's polling at 20%+.
No, please.
He's not going to win many seats. I think he's going to win 3 to 5 seats. That's the range at the moment, right? 3 to 5 seats. But he's polling above the Tories, and not by a small 1 or 2%. The most recent thing I've seen is, I think it's 5% plus the Tories, okay? It's around about just under 40% for Labour, over 20% for Farage, and below 20% for the Tories. This is a movement in the UK that we have to watch out for. No one believed Brexit was going to occur. This could very well be that he has the second highest number of votes in this election, and that means the next election, the reason he doesn't win seats is what happens is when they go to the, because of the system in the UK, where it's the first past the post, you're deciding to waste your vote on relay form or vote for the Tories. But if he comes out like, you know, like I said, 20%+, next time around they might be deciding, do we waste our votes on the Tories or vote for reform? And in that scenario, you have a change in the UK government that you have not seen for over a century.
We'll see in 2 weeks' time, which is actually one day less than 2 weeks. But Viv, what you're saying is volatility in European markets is guaranteed over the summer months. Is that what you're saying?
Over the next 2 weeks. 2 weeks. Next week is the French election, the week after is the UK election.
Okay, we'll watch out for that. Now, gentlemen, I have to tell you a story. David, you've embraced the cheating aspect of AI because when someone asks you to do a presentation, you press, give me my presentation, and it spews it out, and you talk it. So you're a fraud. Okay, we understand that. But that's okay. You know, you've got to have an easy life. You've done your time. You've had more than 50 years in the markets, and you deserve to have someone else do it for you. So we understand that. Viv, you're an AI fanatic, and you're the most knowledgeable person that I've ever spoken to about it. Now, let me tell you about this. I don't know if you have ever sold a house in South Africa, but my experience of it is that you have a show day on a Sunday, and a bunch of deadbeats traipse in and out, steal your spoons and go away. And eventually you get someone who puts in an offer substantially lower than the one, the asking price. Now, in the Netherlands, this is what happened to me. I was invited over for a cup of tea the other morning to a friend's house. And this person said, well, look, I've put all these flowers in here and everything in the house looks nice because I'm the estate agent. The realtor is coming over. And the realtor arrived, very nice fellow, and he had this super duper iPhone Pro latest edition, and he took some photos. And he showed me the photos afterwards, and I said, this doesn't look like the same house. I said, no, because this is the iPro. I photoshopped it and everything. And then a woman arrived, a young girl, a woman, late 20s, I'd say, with a device the size of a torch, and she's held it in her hand, and I saw these lights bleeping on it, and she walked around the house and said, what are you doing? She said, I'm measuring the house. And this thing measured every room to the exact centimeter, and that's going to be used by the realtor. And it took 10 minutes to do the whole house, and it's a three-story house. Then along came the drone operator, and this is where I got really interested. I said, he took this thing out of his pocket and he unfolded it and he put it on the table in the garden outside and said, watch this. and he had this little sort of console, like a games console, and he was whizzing around. This thing whizzed up into the air and disappeared, and immediately you heard the seagulls cawing because they don't like it when the drone goes up there because they're breeding at the moment. They think it's a threat. And he showed me this on this picture on the console, and the drone flies away from them automatically, and it goes around the whole town taking photos and goes down the street and takes photos and everything. And then he presses a button saying, come back. It comes back nice and slowly and lands in his hand. And I said, well, tell me about this. How much is it? Well, it's 100,000 rand equivalent, but it can go to 10 kilometers high. He has to have a flying license for this thing. And I thought, selling a house has become high tech. Wow. And Viv, you'll appreciate this because you're way above my level. But that blew my mind. I had to sit down for half an hour.
Yeah, I'll blow your mind even further. Amazon, 3 weeks ago, right, got FAA approval for flying drone deliveries.
Oh, gosh.
You can imagine that. Okay, one drone up in the air, you can imagine. Imagine the amount of drones that Amazon can put in the air for deliveries. And they have FAA approval 3 weeks ago. It's old news.
It's extraordinary. And I said, well, what about AI? He said, yes, I've already ordered my next drone because this will be out of date in 6 months' time. And the next one I have will have AI capability. I can't keep behind because otherwise my business will go. He's doing five houses a day and five industrial complexes a day, and he's charging like €500 for every session. He's making a fortune out of this. But this little thing landed in his hand. David, I mean, you and I, we're Luddites compared to this creature and to Viv, of course.
Does it put fictitious furniture in the house, or does it?
It doesn't. It says clean the place up and put your flowers in and everything. But what it does do, along the road.
It gives you genuine.
Yeah, it does, but they're super enhanced. Yeah. But the drone flies along the road, and they're talking to each other.
So you know exactly where you are.
And the bloke opens the door and says, welcome to number 10. And the drone sort of introduces you. It's incredible. This house will sell in 5 minutes, I'm telling you. Anyway, gentlemen, David, give us the closing JSC indices, please.
So if we closed down 0.79% at 80073. The miners were okay. The resource index up 1.5%. I think we saw, as you mentioned earlier on, that commodity prices were a little stronger. So the resource index, as I say, 1.5%. And then financials, which have had an incredible run, down 1.5%. Banks, 1.4%. And we saw a similar sell-off in consumer stocks as well. Even the property index came down as well after a really good run. The REIT index here down 3%. Overall property down just 2.9%. But just a little bit of give back after three very, very strong days.
Very good. Gentlemen, I'm going to nip off, put my England shirt on and watch England versus Denmark because it's coming up. I'm all of a doodah about that. Very, very nervous. Thank you very much for a really good chat, as always. David Shapiro is from Sassman Securities, and Viv Govender is from Rand Swiss, and that was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.